I'm not very good at singing songs, but here's a try.
To Radio Free Thinker, that was Glorious Dawn by Carl Sagan. It's a custom song created by the YouTube user Melody Sheep. So thank you, Melody Sheep. Hello, my name is Ethan, you're a free-thinking historian.
And I'm Don, your philosopher, political science guy.
I'm Rob, cognitive psychologist, and I didn't have anything prepared extra to say today.
Well, usually you have like a funny little one-liner or something.
Yes.
Funny
you know,
in
you know.
Finger quotes. But,
yeah. Oh, that's funny. So what's going on in the world of science?
Well, over this past week, the Nobel Prizes have been given out. And actually, a couple of Canadians have won Nobel Prizes. One of the three to win a Nobel Prize in physics was a dual citizen of Canada and the U.S. And one of the winners for the Nobel Prize in medicine grew up in Canada. The physics prize was awarded to three people who invented the first successful imaging technology using a digital sensor. And also they made discoveries leading to fiber optic transfer of data. So they basically pioneered the use of imagery and light in technology today.
So that's like the CCD device that you get like in digital cameras?
Yes.
Cool. That's pretty good.
And the Nobel Prize in Medicine went to three people for their discovery and study of telomeres, the molecular caps on the ends of our genes, which have been implicated in aging and the development of cancer. So a lot of anti-aging and cancer research has come out of their work.
That's also been related, too, with cloning, right? I mean, one of the problems they've been having with creating clones is that these telomeres themselves continue to shorten. So even though you clone yourself, it's not like you start off with a fresh lease on life. You kind of start off.
Yeah, you start off. The telomeres basically continue shrinking the genes, sort of cutting them shorter and shorter, and it's been a problem for anti-aging. Nobel Prizes notwithstanding, a couple of top scientists, including people like E.O. Wilson, have recently sent and signed a letter to the Nobel Foundation saying that the Nobel Prizes need an overhaul. They call for the creation of new prizes for environment and public health, and to open the prizes to organizations and younger individuals. And the average age of people who win Nobel Prizes in this year, 60, 70.
Well, isn't that supposed to be sort of like a lifetime achievement?
It is a lifetime achievement, but it is also, you know, you want to recognize massive advances in the sciences. You have to wait some time to see whether they've actually caused massive advances or not. But at the same time, there's not a lot of incentive to try and work for them. Some of these people didn't even work together. They were grouped together because their research was related. And the letter also calls for prizes to look across disciplines to include often overlooked research in fields such as ecology, neuroscience, and psychology.
I know one of the weird things that come up is someone like Einstein, who won a Nobel Prize, but he won it for his work in electromagnetism, and never won for his famous theory of relativity, because one of the things that the Nobel Prize focuses on isn't theoretical work so much as actual practical demonstration of theory.
And another thing is that a lot of botanists, they do a lot of work in genetics, ecology, the tobacco mosaic virus that helped study the development of viruses was found in the tobacco plant, and they never won a prize for it because it was not part of physiology or medicine. It was botany.
Well, not to suggest, though, that we want to make science a prize-driven field, though.
This is true. It's just that the Nobel Prizes are called upon by these scientists to recognize advancements outside of the narrowly defined disciplines that Alfred Nobel wrote about in his will more than 100 years ago.
Right. So perhaps the answer would be to have maybe awards for theoretical science, as opposed to just kind of segmenting it all up, have awards designed for, say, theoretical science, designs awards for, you know, advancements in medicine, as opposed to, you know.
I think there's also a precedent for this, too, because, I mean, the Nobel Prizes have changed. I mean, one of the ones that's a stick in my craw, so to speak.
The Nobel Prize in economics, with quotation marks around that.
Which was sponsored by Swedish banks, right, which is trying to promote economics as a science, and as we all know, that's farcical. But they might win one, I think, for literature. I can give them one there. But, I mean, the point being is that there is precedent for remixing the Nobel Prizes, and I think that would be a good thing to reflect how our importance have changed, and I think to reflect some of the theoretical advances. But one of the problems they have, one of the reasons why I think they leave the Nobels to so late, is it somehow seemed to be a little tacky for someone to win more than one Nobel Prize, at least in the same field.
It's true.
And if you give one out when they're younger, however you define that term, there's always the chance that they might be a genius again and win a second prize, and somehow that just seems snobbery.
It seems snobbery. Yeah. Well, speaking of snobbery and the Nobels living in the past, this is the first time in history that the Nobel Prize has honored more than one woman at one time.
You have to assume that there's been some pretty smart female scientists in the past.
In fact, the Nobel Prize awarded to Francis Crick and James Watson for the discovery of the structure of DNA, a lot of their work was predicated on work done by Rosalind Franklin, who was never honored with the prize.
Well, but see, there again, you have another weird rule. She was dead at the time that they awarded the thing, so they also don't give them out
posthumously.
Thank you. So
clearly there's some problems.
Room for improvement. Very great for these scientists.
Yes.
Room for improvement.
Congratulations to the Nobel winners.
And it always shows you that dynamite does have a good positive side. Mm. Nobel Prize being sponsored largely by Nobel's invention of dynamite, therefore.
Okay.
Dynamite, good.
Elsewhere in This Week in Science, I think there was the discovery of a new fossil of some interest.
Right, and who's going to say its name?
RD something? I know it's been referred to as RD.
Let's just stick with that.
Ardipithecus ramidus. That's it. Nicknamed RD because who wants to say Ardipithecus ramidus?
Yeah, that's a good.
Without a good beat.
Right.
RD. Yeah, okay.
So. Well, this is pretty important. This is kind of interesting. It's kind of shaken up things a little bit. Apparently, RD, who is older than the quite famous Lucy, is walked upright. So over a million years before Lucy did, the Australopithecus Frenes fossil. Although it should be noted that Artie did not walk up upright all the time, just sometime. But it is kind of a surprise to people studying the evolution of humanity.
I remember reading an interview with a paleoanthropologist that basically said that this means that there is a long period in the Pleistocene, I believe, where there was sort of this stable period of human evolution, which was this Ardipithecus fossil.
I think one of the big things with Artie, sorry, is that they point out a lot of biological differences, and the big one, which of course is comparing it to apes and all that. But I mean, a lot of the Lucy thing was the idea that we developed humanity from going into the savannah, and Artie is a monkey. He's a monkey. He's more a monkey than he is anything.
Yeah, there was a sort of interesting illustration of this, that if you squat down on your sort of knees and, stand on your feet, but squat down your knees and hang your arms down, you can just barely touch your shins. Whereas the Ardipithecus fossils, you can tell that they would still be basically holding their knuckles on the ground, which is indicative of someone who, something that was a tree dweller,
right? And it does
and more ape-like than
it does, though, indicate that apes specialized a lot more recently than we previously thought, because of the differences that we see between Artie and like chimpanzees and modern apes. So it does lend some interesting thoughts on sort of the development and the quote-unquote missing link between man and ape.
That's something that really irritates me. You know, you see a lot of traditional news outlets talking about, yes, every time a fossil is found, it's the missing link. It's the missing link. How many times do you need to say that they found the missing link before you realize there are no missing links? There's just more fossils filling out the record.
Well, there is still the one fossil that we want to see that, you know, earlier than Artie. Artie's already pretty early. It's earlier than Lucy. There's got to be one before Artie as well, right? So
you can't identify one particular...
Well, I'm not saying there's going to be one like fossil that has a little sign on it or something, missing link.
The idea is that we're filling in an already pretty well-documented fossil record, and that the idea of it's the missing link is sort of spurious.
Well, I think you guys are missing another important thing here, too, is part of what we've done is when we look at the fossil record, we've done it from a homocentric point of view, that, you know, apes evolve and then we're more evolved than them, that we are somehow superior to them. But what Artie shows is that apes have evolved just as much, probably more physiologically, than humans have. So in some sense, if you're dealing with physiology, they're more quote-unquote advanced, because their physiology has diverged more significantly than humans have.
And yeah, they're more evolved, advanced to a particular
to fill their ecological niche.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
Evolution promotes you to do.
Okay. Well, why don't we take a quick break? And when we come back, we're going to have an interview with Steve Toms, who is the author of Some Canadian Skeptic blog and also the editor in chief of Skeptic North.
Then there's the utter misery that is college radio, where they apparently just let any bewildered freshman wander into the booth and try to run a radio station. Campus Outreach is looking for... Hang on. College radio can pretty much be summed up in five words.
CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Okay, so joining us now on Radio Freethinker, we have the author of Some Canadian Skeptic, Steve Toms. Steve, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So recently there was a rather inflammatory article written in the Georgia Strait, which is a quote-unquote independent newspaper here in Vancouver, basically advocating that homeopathic remedies are better than science-based medicine and should be used exclusively.
Yeah.
And you blogged about this, Steve, and a lot of Canadian skeptics were, very surprised and annoyed with this. What was your take on the article?
Well, this particular paper has had a history of doing this. Now, it's weird for me being way out here in Ontario because I don't see the print edition. I only see what goes online. And back in June, the original homeopathic article that caused so much defense was written just at the beginning of summertime, and it was, hey, you can use homeopathy for your summer scrapes and bruises. Don't worry about it because homeopathy's got it covered. You should get a homeopathic first aid kit. And some people looked into it, myself included, and we found out that the author of that article sold these homeopathic first aid kits and operated her own homeopathic clinic called... actually, you know what? I don't want to say it.
Yeah. Well, that's only one of the major conflict of interest with this article and this author. The other one being that she's also the daughter of the paper's owner.
Yeah.
So some major nepotism going on as well.
Now, nepotism by itself is not really forbidden or a conflict of interest. I mean, like, I worked at the same shop that my mom worked when I was a teenager. That kind of thing does happen, and it happens in the U.S. Senate all the time.
Right.
But by itself, there were a lot of, on top of that, there were a lot of very, we'll say, counter arguments to the original articles, and there wasn't much, shall we say, editorial oversight when the Canadian skeptical community jumped on it. There wasn't too much saying boo about it, and a lot of us are kind of wondering, are they not speaking up against the author because of the family connection? Or are they ideologically aligned with the author? We just don't know. But either way, it is another wrinkle in all this.
And there was a response, but the response itself actually seemed to raise more questions about the Georgia Strait's motives. And you blogged about that as well. What was that article about?
Well, the response that they wrote was... The argument was that homeopathy was more dangerous. Excuse me, that a trip to the hospital was more dangerous than taking homeopathic remedies exclusively, and they cited a CMAJ journal entry that talked about all the people that have died or have had poor medical treatment in a hospital, but they really mangled the analysis of the statistics, and I kind of called them on that, as did a few other Canadian bloggers. It was a really, really embarrassing article for the Strait to publish because it didn't answer the skeptics' charges. It didn't answer the charge of why are you advocating homeopathy exclusive treatment when we have this looming H1N1 virus that is a very serious health threat. What's the evidence? And the counter argument was, oh yeah, well, hospitals are bad too. How come you don't talk about hospitals? And the skeptic's argument is, that's not the point. because, like, well, first of all, that was a tu quoque logical fallacy. The, yeah, you're doing it too. Well, that doesn't help us because we're trying to talk about the evidence and you're not presenting any. And in fact, you are causing more harm. And you're also not showing any evidence for homeopathy. Other than that advertisement for the original article's homeopathy clinic.
Exactly. And it does raise a lot of moral questions. I mean, if I were to advocate, say, drinking paint to cure cancer, I would be in a lot of trouble. Why can the Strait get away with saying that the flu can be cured by water, essentially?
Well, normally you'd think that they can't. A bunch of my Canadian skeptic colleagues looked into this as to what we can do, and somebody pointed out, well, we can go to the BC Press Council and issue an actual complaint. Well, it turns out that the Georgia Strait is not a member of the BC Press Council, so they can't do anything because they are an alternative press, so they are not really accountable to the normal journalistic standards of ethics. So what are we left with? We can go after them through their advertisers. And we can threaten their advertisers of boycotting their products until they really come down on the Georgia Strait for three really anti-scientific, not just pseudoscientific, but anti-scientific medical advice. The third response was in the blog's politics section, so it was kind of pushed as an opinion piece, but the other two pieces were in the health section. That's enormously irresponsible for my money.
And it's quite shocking that so they don't have to basically answer to standard journalistic integrity that, you know, quote, corporate newspapers would have to. You mentioned before in our correspondence that there was a newspaper in Toronto that kind of had a similar game plan.
Yeah.
Do they also do the same sort of thing with homeopathy and promoting pseudoscience, I suppose?
Well, I'm not going to say the name of the paper, but anybody listening that lives anywhere near Toronto has heard of this particular alternative news source. I have never heard anything quite nearly as bad as don't go to the hospital, use homeopathy instead. But I have heard a lot of conspiracy theory or like fears of water fluoridation and the usual like really tin hat kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But by and large, mostly banal. Although the water fluoridation thing is a pretty important thing. There seems to be this proliferation of alternative news. And I use those really big air quotes around the word news. It seems to be targeted at the 20-something left of center or often extreme left political student activist-y kind of community. But it also offers health advice, and that's when the skeptics kind of jump in and say, you better get the science right, or we're going to chase you down.
You know, that's definitely a good point. I mean, we've often talked on this show that Vancouver does seem to have a problem with alternative medicine, and it does seem to be that if you argue against it, or if you argue pro-science-based medicine, you're either a sellout to Big Pharma, or you're actually part of the conspiracy and you're in the pocket of Big Pharma.
Yeah. If you look at the comments of the three articles on the Strait, there were charges of us being shills for the pharmaceutical industry, for the, and I quote, the pharmaceutical military industrial complex. I love that they can just invent something out of a whole cloth and just act like it's a thing. Mm-hmm. So I'm not quite sure what they're implying, that the military is going to force us to have vaccine. I don't understand. and on top of that, a military industrial complex is a very specific structure. And I hardly think that you can just add in a fourth one and have it still make sense.
Well, it does raise certain questions. I mean, the military-industrial complex is one thing, but I don't think that you could consider, say, doctors or pharmacists soldiers for the drug companies. I think that's a bit of a stretch.
Well, on top of that, I'm not making any money off of this. And all the comments that I read, I knew quite a few of them. They're not making, like, we're all doing this on our own dime. No one's profiting off of our criticism of homeopathy in the Georgia Strait. However, if that's going to be their argument, well, then they have to also point the arrow at themselves and say, well, we're also advertising for this homeopathy clinic, and the author is the editor's daughter, so they clearly have a financial interest in plugging in homeopathy. So why don't they have that at least consistency? And yet they're still very eager to do the tu quoque logical fallacy and say hospitals are bad too.
Yes, and the other major issue there is that homeopathy itself is a multi-billion dollar industry and operates with no regulation, unlike drug companies. So I think it's a bit of a double standard they're forcing on skeptics when they're making a lot of money.
It's very unregulated, and part of it goes into the connection to ethnopharmacology. Why would you want to regulate these medicines and treatments and remedies that are part of a particular culture or ethnicity? That shows cultural insensitivity. Never mind the science, because it's all part of our culture. And I find that the homeopathy, while not really falling under the guise of ethnopharmacology, it definitely does have that banner of alternative, and so it kind of gets lumped into naturopathy and old like folk remedies and all that kind of stuff. The science doesn't matter because it's the culture of it that really matters. Right. And when they do cite science, they cite peer-reviewed journals that are peer-reviewed by other homeopaths, published in homeopathic journals, and they say, here's our scientific journal. Well, no. And most I came across one recently that was written by Sonia McLeod, who was the homeopath who published the homeopathic benefits of raccoon fur. It's really hard to take that stuff seriously, but once you read the study, it's nope. It's lots of anecdotal evidence, and it really kind of I question if these people understand what science actually is.
Well, it makes me wonder that I think they have an idea, but they're just trying to use enough sort of buzzwords to make themselves sound legitimate. But it's hard to say for sure.
Yeah, it's hard to judge somebody's motivation, and I don't want to get into that particular business, although when they do have a clear financial stake, well, then there is at least that we can go on. But the knowledge of science and the buzzwords that you point out, people generally think who don't have a science education or are not even science literate, at least, because I don't have a science education, but I am science literate. Science is more than just experimentations, or science is more than just observation. It goes through a very specific process that involves hypothesis, experimentation, and validation, and also this meat grinder that is the peer review process. And the alternative medicine community doesn't understand that last part is really crucial.
Well, exactly. Well, thank you, Steve, for joining us here on Radio Free Thinker. We encourage all our listeners to check out Steve's blog at www.somecanadianskeptic.com. And we hope to talk to you again soon, Steve.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate this.
Okay, thank you.
Cheers.
The CRTC is asking the public for comments as part of a nationwide review of campus and community radio. That review includes this station. We're asking that you let the CRTC know what local, nonprofit, volunteer-driven radio means to you and your community. Maybe you're a fan of community radio. Maybe you've donated. Or maybe you're a volunteer. Then please write to the CRTC and make sure you tell them you support the idea of stable funding for the sector. To submit your comments, visit the website crtc.notlong.com and look for review number 418, the review of campus and community radio. The last day for comments is Friday, October 16th.
And we're back on Radio Free Thinker. So we were talking there about the Georgia Strait, and we still recommend all our listeners, please write into the Georgia Strait, tell them how pissed off you are about the quality of reporting they're doing. And if you want to get some more information on that, I suggest you look up Kennedy Goodkey's Asshole Skeptic blog. He's got a cut-and-paste letter that you can send to the Georgia Strait and the advertisers. And we also want to mention Skeptic North, which is the first and only pan-Canadian skeptical blog with contributors from all over Canada, including myself, from different, we talk about different skeptical issues and different activism that Canadians are up to with regards to promoting skepticism and critical thinking across the country. And you can find that webpage at www.skepticnorth.com.
For my skeptic highlight of this week, I'd like to promote a new book by Richard Dawkins. This is mine and Elon's, our Ottawa foreign host. It's called The Greatest Show on Earth, The Evidence for Evolution. It's an audiobook that I've listened to. It's quite good. It's not intended, of course, to convince the Pope or anything. Richard Dawkins' name has a rather inspiring view that tends to scare away those who have a belief in history denial. as he uses. But it's a good book. It goes through the ideas of evolution. It presents the theories, the reasons why evolution is true, in an idea that allows you to have evidence to defend yourself when people say, oh, I don't believe in it. Why is it true? Or what about this claim of falsity?
And this is Rob saying that the L-Cross impact will be happening in the early morning on October 9th. L-Cross is the NASA mission to crash a probe into the moon to shoot a plume out of the mantle, hopefully to find frozen water. You can have a clear viewing line of sight to the impact crater. If you're anywhere west of the Mississippi. So go to nasa.gov/LCross and look up for the time and how to observe it with your own telescope.
That's awesome. I love seeing things crash into the moon.
This isn't part of their manned mission, is it? They just said, screw it, he's not coming back.
That's a bad draw for whoever's piloting that one. Well, one final announcement. If you're on campus right now, please go to the UBC Freethinkers Movie Night, which is at 7 p.m. tonight, room B211 in the Buchanan Buildings. We're screening The Life of Brian, so check it out if you're free for that. And this is Ethan, your freethinking historian, saying thanks for listening.
This is Don saying eyes open, minds on.
This is Rob saying make sure to watch us crash into the moon on October 9th and have a good evening.
Then there's the utter misery that is college radio, where they apparently just let any bewildered freshman wander into the booth and try to run a radio station.
Campus Outreach is looking for... Hang on.
College radio can pretty much be summed up in five words.
CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
By the way, if you see your mom this weekend, would you be sure and tell her,
Satan! Satan! Satan!
A couple thousand years after his infamous kiss, the paperwork has finally been filed and Judas will get his trial. But Satan is on the witness list. Pacific Theater is proud to present, in a co-production with Pound of Flesh Theater, an extended staged reading of Stephen Adley Gurgis's wildly funny and provocative drama, The Last Days of Judas Iscariot. In a comic courtroom drama that mixes myth and history, the witnesses are called to decide eternal questions of forgiveness, mercy, and damnation.
The Last Days of Judas Iscariot runs from October 7th to 17th at Pacific Theater, 1420 West 12th. For tickets, call 604-731-5518 or visit pacifictheater.org.
Welcome, everybody, to Wieners Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. I'm Daryl Wiener. Along with me for, I'm not going to say always, but quite often.
Third week in a row,
Tyler Noble, our sports director here at CITR. Tyler, we've got Ryan Solomon, color commentator for UBC Thetford Men's Football, on the line. We'll jump right into it, but before we get to Ryan, Tyler, you're the play-by-play guy. UBC loses to Calgary 50-26. Does the score just say it all, or?
Well, no. I think that the Thunderbirds played better than the 50 points against would indicate. They did have some flashes of brilliance on offense. Unfortunately, a number of turnovers were really bad ones, and defensively they again just could not stop the run at all. Both Glavich, the quarterback, and the running back Matt Walter, just had a field day out there, and that was really the story.
Yeah, when your team gives up 370.